Welcome to the Hot Love Podcast. Kevin A.C., Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. I'm in Chicago, Padres' first road trip after a 7-0 homestand. Most successful start Padres history. Of course, they're a half game back in the NL West because the Dodgers are 8-0. Ryan, so much happened. Ryan, Jackson Merrill, just some incredible baseball. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the start, and just, you know, 7-0, I think, is something that if the Dodgers weren't just as good, if not better, the Padres would be the story in baseball right now. Not only are they 7-0, they're 7-0 and playing really well. They're not winning games 13-11. It's smart baseball. It's an extension of what we saw last year. And more than anything, Kevin, it's striking me, the superstars are playing like superstars. How important has that been to the 7-0 start?
I think you made a lot of really good points there. Like, you know, there was a time in 2021, this team seemed unbeatable, right? They were in first place at the end of May. By the end of June, they'd had a stretch where they won, I think it was 9 in a row, and then they had won 10 of 11. And I mean, it just seemed, but things were kind of starting to come off the rails already, and it was a lot of big comebacks. It was a lot of outslugging other team, and that's great. But like Mike Schilt is fond of saying, it's not always going to be there. So you've got to do the little things. And the point you made about the extension of last year, that's huge. Like 7-0 is great. I think my point has been like 6-1 or 5-2 would be good if they were playing like this, right? And hadn't had two clunkers. And, you know, but it's really at this point about how they're playing, though, you know, I would also like to make the point, it's good that you're stockpiling wins. You had made so many good points. I think your actual question was about the superstars. I missed it. That is another thing. And it won't always happen. So write it while you can. But while we have talked a lot here that 90% of how this team does is going to be around Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr., Jackson Merrill, Xander Bogaerts, maybe to some extent Jake Cronenworth, who's a very important player, but is not a part of like that group. But in particular, Manny, Jackson, Tatis. And those guys have started by hitting well and playing really well.
Yep.
And playing at the plate. I have not eaten in like a day, so I'm going to eat. Sorry.
Is that an acai bowl?
It is an acai bowl. It's all that was across the street. Yeah. So this is life on the fly. So,
What's interesting to me, though, is we talk about their superstars. Their superstars are some of the guys playing the heads-up baseball. I want to talk about two points. Number one, Manny Machado's play at third base the other day that led to a double play. I know that you wrote about this extensively in Padres Daily, but take our listeners through it real quick. And to me, it was just brilliant of him.
Yeah, and then he plays it off like it wasn't. And look, these guys are – this is how, like, you want – guys who are making $31.75 million a year on average to play, right? But that doesn't mean it's easy, right? Like it's in the moment. And the beautiful thing is all these plays that have come up that you don't practice, but because you do practice a lot of stuff, because you do stress being in the game, right? Knowing the game, knowing the rules, knowing the little things you can exploit. So it was Kyle Hart on the mound, and for some reason, Gabe Arias is on second base. There's runners on first and second. There's no outs. Looks like Kyle Hart's going to be a little bit of trouble in the fifth inning. Might not make it out of the fifth. And Arias takes off for second. Xander Bogaerts screams off. Kyle Hart steps off, throws to third. They get Arias by a lot. Arias comes in, the Cleveland runner, by the way, former Padres farmhand. He comes in, and he comes in standing up and kind of bear hugs Manny, and kind of the way it looks and the way Manny makes it look, he takes Manny to the ground like a soft tackle. Right. Well, Manny then, by the way, if you're watching, you'll see, without the ball in his throwing hand, pulls his hand out and makes a throw to second without the ball in his throwing hand. Interference is called. Both runners are out. It's just a magnificent play.
Yeah, and then you wrote about the second one today in today's Padres Daily, and this is my daily plug. If you're not subscribed to Kevin Acey's Padres Daily, please do so. Not only is it free, but it's the best thing we do Padres-wise. It's just amazing. The second heads-up play I want to talk about happened yesterday. First and third, you've got Fernando Tatis Jr. on third, Luis Arraez on first. Arraez breaks for second. They throw down. Tatis scores. Watch a lot of Little League baseball in my life. Draw it up, isn't it?
It is. If the second baseman, who's a local kid, Daniel, right?
Daniel.
So Daniel Schneeman, if he had, I really believe, and so did, because on something like this, I like to ask too, since I didn't play Major League Baseball. They believe that, you know, Arias could have been tagged out before Manny got, or before Tatis got home. But let's just say, look, that's a part of it too, man. The Padres are putting so much pressure on teams that the other team is sometimes going to make them look foolish. Mm-hmm. They're going to execute correctly. And then sometimes they're not. And so Schneeman gets the ball. Arias ran a little too far. Mm-hmm. And he got a little too close to Schneeman. Schneeman, like, then, but then Ohtani took off and he was close to home. So Schneeman throws home. I think Tati was going to beat it anyway, but the throw was high and Tatis is safe. The beauty of this is if you watch this, Tatis had the big lead, like is often the case, right? The third baseman's playing at third base. It is third base position. Jose Ramirez, the third baseman, is not covering. So Tati had a big lead. And so he was a lot closer to home. And it's like, teams have to think about this now. Like, do I always have to hold this guy on third and create this big hole on the left side? Like, the Padres are in, or I shouldn't say this, like, not that they're in their heads. I don't want to imply that, but like, they are getting in teams' heads. Their secondary leads they're getting. I mean, I thought it was, you start to cover a guy and you know what he's going to talk about after a game for the most part. Though Schilt does surprise me sometimes, you know, there's some play that he wants to talk about, but an inconsequential play that he wanted to talk about that I knew he would yesterday, Jackson Merrill on first base. And he talked about the hustle. Sure. Jackson Merrill beats out a fielder's choice to shortstop, as in he beats the throw to shortstop. So there's no force. It loads the bases. I say it's inconsequential because they don't end up scoring. Okay. But Jackson's secondary lead was so huge. He basically could have walked to second base. I'm exaggerating to make the point. But these guys are taking every little tiny thing to create advantages.
Right. To me, what's good too is, you know, sometimes you can almost insult a ball player by saying that, you know, he does the little things well, right? It's a way to say, you know, say what you will about so-and-so.
He's not very good.
He's not very right. He takes every inch, and the implication is because if he didn't take every inch, he wouldn't be in the big leagues, right? What is so interesting to me is that some of the best players are the guys making the heads up plays.
I mean, really
Machado,
good point,
you know, with just two bold steals on opening day, leading to runs. You look at Cronenworth with the little deke on the low line drive to second base. He turns into a double play. Machado with the fake throw, Tatis scoring from third, Arise, you know, deking the second baseman into you know, attempting to tag or rushing the throw. This isn't just the thing that your fifth outfielder does anymore. This is they've got their superstars playing this style, and I think it's really paying off well.
I will say this, that one of the best moves that the Padres made, and I'm not saying there was intent to it, like he was going to be the next manager, but one of the best moves the Padres made was bringing in Mike Schilt in 2022 to be an advisor. Then Mike Schilt, who was supposed to shuttle back and forth based on various things. Some guys got COVID. Bob Melvin had a prostate thing. At some point in the second year, Matt Williams had cancer and had missed some time. Dave Macias got sick. And finally, like, Schill was just around the major league team all the time with this nebulous role, right? Mm-hmm. He observed. He did how many times, Ryan, you just changed jobs. You didn't know that what a jerk your beat writer was for the Padres. You think he's this nice guy. Mm-hmm. You come in and you're like, oh, man, now I got to deal with this guy, Jeff Sanders. Mm-hmm. Ha, deked you right there. But, like, everything's rosy, right? You think you have a good grasp on what's happening at this company you're about to go in a management position or whatever, right? You get there and you go, oh, wow, there were these things I didn't know about. Mike Schilt knew. He knew what it was like to work for AJ Preller. He knew what it was like to manage Manny Machado. He knew where this team needed to get better and what their problems were culturally and on the field. And that was a huge advantage that he was given and that he took advantage of. Because, by the way, he wasn't hired till almost December of that year. So there was almost like this no offseason. But like he was already there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. I mean, to me, getting the buy-in, you know, I would love one of these days, Kevin, when you write your book, I want to know about the buy-in. Was it as simple as everybody was so embarrassed because of what happened in 2023 that they were more receptive to get guys playing this way? I mean, and again, I bang this drum all the time. We don't talk about teams being well-coached in baseball. We talk about it in football. We talk about it in basketball. This is a well-coached team. They are doing, I mean, through a week, man, it's hard. There haven't been a whole lot of screw-ups here in the first week. And, you know, it's a big reason why they're 7-0. Can we talk about Jackson Merrill for a minute?
Yeah, that's another reason, though. I want to make sure that you're on it. And I've written about it, but that what Schilt did to empower other guys because it was necessary because too much was on Manny. They in 23, and it's just a little too, it's too simple for me to say, but to get the point across, I'll say it. They put their uniforms out there on the field and thought, we're pretty awesome. Like we should hit 8 home runs a game, right? And it didn't work. And so, yeah, they were embarrassed. And that's how a lot of people, the new people that came in, kind of felt like, wow, this is a really receptive environment. So, yes, Jackson Merrill.
Jackson Merrill agrees to a 9-year contract extension. On paper, it's 135 with escalators that could take it up to significantly more, but not mind-alteringly more. This is a deal that, Kevin, when we first talked about it, I went, you mean 6 years and $135 million? You said, no, 9. This seems like a deal that, while it has a lot of risks inherent in it, Jackson Merrill hasn't been a big league ball player for very long. Injuries could pop up. This seems like a win-win for both the player and the club.
I think you're right. I do. Because it's hard to say that a guy who's going to get 135 after California taxes, like 85, maybe. But this guy, the guy who's got this, this incredible money, that he's not a winner, right? Mm-hmm. There would be have people that would have you believe, and they might make some good points, on the, you know, just the points that are valid. Like he could have got more. Okay. Yep. So it's good for Jackson. That's all he wanted. He said that's all he wanted was something that he considered fair. Okay. We don't get to tell Jackson Merrill what's fair, right? Jackson Merrill wanted to be here, wanted this thing to be done. The Padres wanted it to be done. It certainly is a win for the Padres. I think he saved, based on the money, you know, 30 to 40 million just on the arb years. And then when Jackson Merrill, if he's this player, we're talking about 500-600 million in 2030, but he's got to wait till 2030 to get it, right? Mm-hmm. If he's, you know, good, we're still talking, he probably left money on the table, but he gets this money now. And I think what people are overlooking too is if he is that guy that you're talking about that was going to get $400 million in 2030, well, he'll get $200 million in 2035.
Yeah, because he'll still only be 31.
And
right?
I might be underestimating 30. It based on baseball inflation, right? Like in 2035, when he's only 31, he could get $400 million.
Right. No, you're right. It's, and again, you know, I had somebody ask me yesterday who's familiar with contracts, but not necessarily baseball contracts, what the Padres' motivation here is. You know, to me, it's cost certainty, isn't it? It's knowing that the arbitration process isn't going to tack an extra X number of million dollars onto your payroll every year. It's knowing that you get somebody who, you know, yes, he's cheaper than he would be on the open market, but you bake in some cost certainty there going forward, essentially.
Especially early. Counting the signing bonus, he gets $4 million next year. It's a $1 million base salary. I think the next year it's up to $6 million. You definitely do, because he was going to be arbitration eligible next year because he played so much. He was a super two. He was the super two. Right. Him and Jackson Churio, I think. And probably Jackson Holliday, but like guys who were, he gets arbitration for 4 years. That was going to be pretty big, man.
Yeah.
So I think that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great point. I wanted to ask you about a point that you had in today's Padres Daily from an agent who is so famous, he spawned the name of our podcast, Scott Boras. He had a quibble with the no trade, and Jackson Merrill must not like the Midwest. Because it's the National League Central and the American
League
Central.
What does Jackson Merrill want to do? What's his number one priority? On the field. What is Jackson Merrill about?
Win.
So he's not going to the AL or the NL Central.
I thought he either wanted to be close to San Diego or close to Maryland. That would have been my guy. No.
Absolutely. Well, he don't want to go. I mean, no one wants to play for the White Sox in Chicago, even when they're good. Right. I joke. So ahead. What are we talking about with Scott Boras here?
Well, Scott Boras has talked that since it isn't a full no trade clause, it's a limited no trade clause, that this is somehow a bad thing. What's his logic there?
It's hard to argue with Scott in that, I mean, this is a eminently tradable guy 8 years from now if the Padres collapse, right? Mm-hmm. Yep, it is. I know Jackson knows that, right? Like, he knows that. They did their research. They know what's happening and what could happen. And Jackson believes that the Padres want him, what the Padres are building. And so he went for it. That doesn't make Scott wrong that it could happen or that it has happened several times in baseball. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But like this, I can trump anything anyone can say. There's a whole bunch of smarter people out there by saying, this is what Jackson wanted. He was advised by his people of virtually everything that you could think of. And this is what Jackson wanted.
Right. The players union, not thrilled with it either.
No,
right.
Uh-uh.
They think that this is a almost too friendly of a club deal. When Fernando Tatis signed his long-term deal with the Padres, more years, but also significantly more money. He mentioned it being a statue contract. Kevin, this guy's really young. This guy's played one full season of big league baseball. Could this be a statue contract for Jackson Merrill?
Well,
This statue guy, and then the
next contract. And it was the Padres. Just as confident and wonderful of a quote as Fernando Tatis Jr. is, he did not call it a statue contract.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I just want to make sure that that would be. Wow, that would be classic Fernando if he did call it a statue. This is my statue contract. You're going to build me a statue. Yes, without a doubt, I have said that from the middle of last year. Jackson Merrill is the kind of guy you build statues for because he's the kind of guy he might not be Fernando Tatis Jr. He just might not be in terms of talent, okay? There are people who believe Fernando could be the best player in the league if he'd gone uninterrupted, but he's the kind of guy Jackson Merrill is that you build a championship team around. And he obviously is good, right? I thought, as much as I cringe at these things, and I think you should, if you don't want to live in this instant world we live in of everybody's got to have a hot take right now, and it's usually wrong, by the way, I cringe at comparisons to Hall of Famers because you know the difference between a future Hall of Famer and a Hall of Famer? The Hall of Famer's in the Hall of Fame. So, let's slow our roll. But I thought Tom Krasovic's column today, despite the fact that he made a comparison to Derek Jeter, to, a kid who's played, 160 games, I thought Tom's column was excellent, and I thought he made a lot of good points. So I was able, as a rational human being, to work around my aversion to comparing players to Hall of Famers, and I thought Kras handled it perfectly, that's who Jackson Merrill is. He is – Derek Jeter wasn't the best. Derek Jeter was a freaking winner who was really good, really, really good. But he's a winner too. And that made Derek Jeter the captain. And I do believe that Kras nailed it on that because I've been saying it for a year. So I like it when people write something I believe in because, that justifies me. That is who Jackson Merrill is.
And very little, maybe none of this is eyewash from him. I mean, the stuff that Jackson Merrill says, he said something yesterday and you finished your story with it. And I had to read it twice. He would like to be more involved with the minor leagues and with the community. This guy has a big enough job as is to play baseball at a high level for the Padres to sit there and say, and now I want to do more just so I can be out there connecting with people. That's not something you hear at a lot of news conferences.
So I noticed a couple games in that Jackson Merrill in spring training, and I wrote about this, was staying for the entire spring training game. And this is not to put down other players, because every single other established player exercises his right to leave the stadium, go get his work in the weight room or whatever treatment, and go home after he's removed from a spring training game. That's what you do. It might even be the smart thing to do. Jackson Merrill stayed to the end of every game. And I've wondered, I've been a Jackson Merrill evangelist since last year, but I still have to keep level-headed, right? Jackson Merrill doesn't walk on water. Jackson Merrill will make mistakes. I'm like, I do wonder how long this will happen, right? Like, every game to the end of spring. Do you understand how interminable that is? Now, there was one game where traffic was going to be really bad. The final game of the year on the road, the regulars went. They all came out after five and left. Jackson came out at the end of seven after staying a few innings because he had to drive home and beat the traffic. That was perfectly understandable. Jackson Merrill went to Instructional League last year. On the morning after playing a game in Phoenix, he drove up to Peoria to watch minor leaguers he didn't know. This wasn't like his buddies. Well, I shouldn't say that. Probably Trevor's, Hoffman's kid. I'm sorry.
Wyatt
was probably there. And they're like best friends. But like, he went to watch these guys. And now here, I'll save the ultimate for last. He just put his money where his mouth is. Like, we all basically have to give Jackson Merrill the benefit of the doubt for whatever he says, because he put his money where his mouth is, right?
Yeah.
Yep. I'm not, like I said, doesn't walk on water. He'll say some stupid stuff, because you know what? We all do, right? He will say some stuff maybe that I don't know, but like, the point is, I have learned already, no, it is not eyewash. The guy is real. That is what makes him. That is what makes Krasna's column, and people should read it. That is what makes him like perhaps a future captain.
Yeah. I will still remember, it was a day last, February. I had taken my kids to a USD baseball game, and we're driving home, and it's Kevin Acey on the call. And you said a few things about Jackson Merrill that I did not initially believe. You went, not only is this guy going to make the team, this guy is going to be really good. And you spare your compliments for when you really are trying to deliver a point home. I mean, I'm not going to praise your baseball acumen that much, because he was a first round pick, but you saw right away that this guy is somebody who could be real special.
He looked better in left field than Toddy looked in right. And that's just, Tatis had to learn how to play the outfield. And by the way, like, Merrill did spend the whole offseason working in left field, but then was playing center. But like, you just said, okay, because Toddy was amazing in right field for a guy who just basically, they said, hey, go work out there. But he was he was taking circuitous routes, Merrill was on it. His attitude, the way this incredible mix that we almost none of us can pull off, where you're in a room with guys you grew up watching on TV, you're now their peer, but you're a rookie, and you are giving them that deference at the same time acting like you belong. I don't know that people understand how hard that is. There was an air about Jackson, and they all appreciated it. And when they all appreciated it, I was like, okay, this is real. And, you know, the guy's bat to ball skills. I didn't know if he was going to be a 240 hitter, a 270 hitter. I didn't know. I mean, that's why I do what I do instead of what AJ Preller does. But you knew that he was going to at least survive in the league. At the very least, he was going to survive. The Padres didn't know last year was going to happen.
No, of course not. Of course not. Padres, Cubs. Three day games, thank goodness. Nothing worse than going to Wrigley Field for a night game, Kevin. Pitching matchups, by the way, especially in April, because what's it going to be at night in Chicago in April?
I think low 40s.
Cold. Just going over pitching matchups real quick. We've got Randy Vasquez versus Shota Imanaga on Friday. That's a tough one. Imanaga has an ERA of 0.5, small sample size, but still pretty good. You know who has an ERA of 0.0 is Nick Pivetta. who pitches Saturday against Matthew Boyd, who is also not allowed a run all year. Interesting. And then we go to Sunday, and it is Kyle Hart versus Ben Brown. Cubs are 5-4. They opened in Japan, and then I think got some sort of a break because they got to go play the A's. Oh, wait. Yeah, they played the A's in Sacramento, didn't they?
Your next stop.
There's that day. Kevin, any keys, anything you're going to be looking out for in the series?
Here we are again. I'm sorry that I've let you down, dear listeners. Been so engrossed in the Padres and just kind of like it's been so fascinating to watch them. Here I am, two podcasts in, and I have not done a lick of work on the opponent. I apologize, but let's remember that it's April. I picked the Cubs to win the Central. A lot of baseball people thought that should happen. But guess what? That's been the case a lot of years, or someone else was picked, whether the Cubs, the Cardinals, and the Brewers won. So that's probably what will happen again. But maybe not with that pitching. I think that the Cubs are a much better team than people think. And you are facing two pretty good pitchers.
Yeah, Shota Imanaga went 15-3 last year with an ERA of under 3.
He was really good, and he was really good, and he was in a really good stretch when the Padres were here. And then what I remember is that Jurickson Profar hit a game-tying home run, or maybe it was a game-tying or go-ahead home run in like the eighth, and then Eniel De Los Santos was in the middle of that stretch where everything he threw got hit out of the park, and they lost that night.
Yeah, and Eniel De Los Santos, who we saw here with Atlanta, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of former Padres there with Atlanta. Yeah.
Oh, and with Cleveland. Oh my gosh.
And with Cleveland. Padres.
Yeah. Kevin, I always put you on the spot. Today is no different. You get to pick here. You want a question about Chicago style pizza or Chicago style hot dogs?
Well, I don't recall having ever eaten either one of them because they're disgusting. From my imagination, but I might have had some Chicago pizza back in when I first came here, like as a baseball writer in the 90s, and I don't think I liked it. I like a nice thin sourdough crust, little foo-foo. So this Chicago pizza, like what about you, Ryan? Do you like Chicago pizza?
I don't, but Chicago hot dogs are great. Chicago style hot dogs are very good. And you wouldn't think that adding...
Well, since that's about all they sell at Wrigley Field. Wrigley Field's the best ballpark. Absolutely love it. Man, the food selection for the fans is just awful. Yeah. Like, it's just old school.
It's like the food you can get.
Hot dogs and sausages.
Yeah, basically, hot dog sausages, and if you'd like a bag of peanuts, they have those. Yes, and that's about it.
And beer.
No, Chicago, and beer. Kevin, I know you try to eat healthy during the season. We've seen you put down an acai bowl here. I know, but if you get a chance, Chicago dogs are good, man. I promise you. You won't hate it.
I don't. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't eat hot dogs, though. So I'm not sure why I come and I put one of those in my mouth. But yes, I'm sure I'm missing out. I'm sure I'm missing out.
This is why you look like you and I look like me. Chicago dogs are delicious. Anyway, that'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. Padres Cubs 3-game series starting Friday morning, San Diego time. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.